We all wish we could talk to animals. As it turns out, we can. Animal Connections with Laura Rowley explores the nature of interspecies communication. What are our animals trying to tell us? Animals commune through love, a force that opens all doors. Listening to them teaches us how to be better humans. Why? We can trust them to tell us the deepest truth about who we are and how one can grow into a more powerful version of self. Laura shares over 20 years of stories and wisdom learned from her work as an animal communicator in this hard and thought-provoking show.
Welcome. I'm Laura Rowley, and you can listen to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. I'm on every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen online or on your mobile devices. To learn more and for a full schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is the media partner for Omega Institute. Thank you for tuning in today. I always appreciate it. The show is growing rapidly, and it always surprises me. Lots and lots of listeners, more than a quarter of a million downloads on the show, well, a lot more than a quarter of a million downloads on the show, accrued throughout the time. So I appreciate all the dedication, and I hope that people find this interesting and helpful and a growth experience and supportive for whatever it is you have going on with in your own home or in your own spiritual realm of where you're trying to grow and understand animals in a different way, or maybe take better care of the animals that you live with. As many of you know, I have a service that I offer, which is basically a consulting service where people book an appointment with me in advance with my assistant, Karen, and when they book, they're interested in a problem that is bothering them. They want me to connect with their animal psychically, just remotely, and help them discern kind of what the trouble is, you know, what's going on with something that might be behavioral or it might be physical. Are they in pain? Those kinds of questions. You can reach me through laurarowleyhealer.com. By the way, that's my personal website, professional website. So it's my name, which is LaurarowleyHealer, healer, HEALER.com. So laurarowleyhealer.com. My assistant is Karen Klein, and she finds a mutually advantageous time slot for us to work through your issues with your animals. I also mentor other people who want to do what I do. You can call her and ask to have a conversation with me about that. I'm starting a new mentorship program that I think will be ready in January. I'm going to have more information on that in the future. It's going to be online, studying with me, homework. A couple weeks later, we meet again. We talk again about what we're getting done, how we're getting it done, where you're stuck, what do you need to work on. I've taught a lot of people how to do what I do because I believe that most of us are far more intuitive or have far more psychic abilities than really we give ourselves credit for. So it's really a question of how do you bring that out? How do you develop that? How do you have faith in that? And so I've done this for, oh gosh, I've been teaching people for over 20 years, maybe 23 years now. And so I'm going to be starting an online class so that people can tune in and kind of, I don't know, enjoy trying that out on their own and seeing where it gets them and where your higher self leads you when you decide to do a class like that often surprises you. I find that very often after people have started participating in my workshops or come to a class with me, they find that it opened up another realm of what they're already doing, a depth to it, a depth to their spiritual self, or possibly, you know, certainly more awareness to what they're doing with their own animals as a family, you know. So if anybody has any questions about that, I encourage you to contact me through laurarowleyhealer.com, and Karen will get you the information on that class. Again, it's sort of in the works. I'm not sure when the start time will be, probably mid-January. So that's what's going on there. Pretty exciting. Meanwhile, in my daily practice, you know, I have I don't know, I see maybe 6 or 7 people a day with their animals. Some of them have 2 or 3 animals in each of those time slots. Some people just want to focus on one, and one animal. The common theme, and that's sort of the title of the show today, is what do I do about my animal? You know, that's why they're calling me. Some of these things are very complicated. Some of them are very simple. But always when you're in the middle of it as a person, a human, in charge of the health and happiness of your loved ones, your animals, you know, it's not all that clear to you. You're in the middle of a maelstrom, usually, of emotion. Am I doing enough is what people want to know, really, from me. Is there more hidden here that, you know, we couldn't find through medical tests, or, you know, because maybe it's more emotional or more behavioral? Can I take more steps to fix this problem? So my job is to sort of sort out that for the person and help them figure out, are they doing enough? You know, once they've done everything that the medical community can offer them, the veterinarian or their own doctors, you know, is there anything else under the surface of things that is causing an illness or causing a problem behaviorally? So I kind of inverted the name of the show a little bit from my perspective, because I sit in the spot of seeing people ask the same questions of themselves, which are very worthy and wonderful to ask of yourself, but they can also get a little torturous because, you know, when we say to ourselves, you know, here's the title of my show today, are you doing too much for your animal? Because it kind of has that wrapped into the idea of, you know, how much is enough, right? How much can we give to a problem to feel good about it ourselves? So lots of times people are calling me because they've already maybe done all the medical workups, and they've actually solved the medical problem with their appropriate medical team. But now they're just wondering, is everything okay, really? So that can be a torturous thing to ask yourself, because sometimes we maybe can always answer that we haven't done enough. So a lot of what I do is try to either unearth some hidden things that would contribute to the health and well-being of the animal, or maybe I sometimes just have to reassure the person that they've done a good job and you're done. So I thought it would be helpful to people to hear a little bit from my perspective kind of what goes through my mind this way, and maybe like 3 big checkpoints that you can use yourself when you're trying to decide, you know, have I done enough? Have I solved this problem? And what you could sort of focus on so that maybe you don't need someone like me to help you and you feel a little more peace and a little more restored, like, oh, okay, I'm done with that. We're all set. Let's move on. So the question then really becomes, you know, when you're trying to solve some sort of a difficult problem with an animal, there's 3 areas that I think really help you kind of gauge, have I done enough? Okay. So the first area is sort of the effort it takes to solve the problem. I'd like to talk about that a little bit today. How much effort is required to solve the problem? A second one might be, how much money does it take to solve the problem? And the third thing would be maybe how much care on your part to solve the problem. So those are 3 big areas, effort, money, and care, that I want to just talk about because they're good nuts and bolts conversations. Some of the things that I talk about on the show get kind of esoteric and, you know, that's fine. I like to try to hit all different points, but this one's a little bit more what you could do at home from a really practical perspective. Excuse me. So the first thing is, when we ask how much is enough, I want you to kind of think about how much effort or, well, maybe inconvenience you have to put into the situation to solve the problem. So for instance, I'll just give you a really quick example. I spoke to someone very recently, and she has a Labradoodle that won't get in her car. So once they go somewhere, the dog seems to have a wonderful time getting there and going for a hike. But then when she goes to leave, she can't get the dog back in the car. So she wanted to know why. Was he sick? What was wrong? The vet said there's, you know, nothing obvious. So, you know, it seems like a healthy, happy dog, but what's up with that? I mean, she can't even drag the dog to her car. So we talked a little bit about the effort it was taking her to solve this problem. And maybe some of her effort was a little misplaced. She got excited about taking the dog, hiking, camping. So when the dog was a puppy, she started to put a lot of effort into teaching him about the car and started to take the dog kind of everywhere with her. So she put a lot of effort in there. It's not easy to take a dog somewhere. You always worry that you're going to overheat them if you have to leave them in the car. And, you know, so she would go, you know, long distances. I'm going to take him, and so the air conditioning's on. He's nice and cool. I'm going to drive all the way out to the coast and go for a hike and then bring him back. So she put a lot of effort in really sort of training the dog and acclimating the dog into liking the car. And certainly the dog loved the hikes. That was very obvious from her perspective as well as mine. But it turns out that he was car sick. So she then sort of redoubled her efforts and started to take him more and more to try to get him over it. So in this case, we sort of have a case, if I can say it this way, of misplaced effort, right? Maybe she should have started smaller in increments of like 10 minutes with treats on either side, treats in the back seat, let the dog sort of literally get used to a moving vehicle. Moving vehicles are not always comfortable for people or dogs. I'm a person that gets car sick, so, and seasick. So like, I really appreciate how this dog just didn't feel well while he was in the car. So she almost put too much effort in. She did these big, long treks with him almost every weekend instead of small, little incremental things. So what I want to say about that is sometimes what's best is to really start small, whether it's training them to go in your car or training them to go maybe be an obedience dog or learn agility or be a animal companion dog. Just because you're kind of all in to the idea of this will be awesome, I've got this dog and we're going to do this together, yay, they might not really be equipped on some level that you might not understand. So start in small increments. Training classes, activities with your dog are priceless. Like, they are so good for the dog. They're so good for you. It usually brings you closer together as family, if you want to call your dog your family. I know most people do think of their animals as their family, same with a horse or even a cat. You know, the more you teach them something that you would like them to do that pleases you and that pleases them, and the more you work that line of relationship, the deeper it becomes, like any relationship. You know, you could say, as a human, I have a boyfriend or I have a girlfriend, but, oh, no, I hardly ever see her. Or, no, we don't talk much. I mean, you know, that ends up not being much of a relationship, right? So if you want it to be juicy and you want it to understand each other well, you know, maybe need to speak more frequently, go on dates, buy flowers, whatever the case may be. In other words, you have to work a relationship. So training, classes, all of those things, activities, fun activities, even going to the dog park, are an essential part of building a relationship, and really, really, I can't say enough about it, but sometimes people get carried away and they do too much. Like, I take him to the dog park till he runs, until all the other dogs start to take the toys away from him, and then he can't even play anymore, and then he just ends up sitting next to me panting. And then people say, does he like the dog park? Well, he liked it for the first 15 minutes, and then he kind of got too tired to keep up maybe with the young, older dogs, you know, if it's a young puppy. Puppies have a lot of energy, but not necessarily always a lot of strength because they're growing and awkward. So if you want to try things like a dog park, or even, you know, with a young horse, if you want to start teaching him to be a show horse, sometimes people think, well, he's four and he looks beautiful. He ought to be able to jump fences. He should be fine. But really, you know, think about how coordinated and how strong you were when you were that particular age group. And it takes time to develop confidence in your body, confidence in yourself, strength in your body, strength in your persona. So like when you take, again, back to my example of the dog going to the dog park, you know, he's trying to figure out, well, where do I fit into this group? Am I part of the pack? Can I play with them? Will the big one beat me up? Sort of like how we felt probably when we went like to kindergarten, you know, so let them just sit next to you the first time for 10 minutes and don't expect them, you know. So I threw the Frisbee for 2 hours and then all the other dogs took it from him and beat him up. I hear that story kind of a lot. So imagine if you were that animal and you were doing things for the first time, that you might be just tired from the very idea of doing it, let alone going and doing it. So keep your training, your classes, your activities small, short sessions that are very rewarding. That gives you instant feedback. Say you go 4 times to the dog park, back to my example, and by the 4th time they actually want to leave your side and they want to chase with the other animals. That's because they figured out that this is fun and they can go do it, and all of a sudden they have some skin in the game. They're into it. So my observation is that often people aren't patient about that because they have romanticize the idea of, I have my own dog now and I'm going to take him every day to the dog park and he's going to love it if he plays for an hour. Well, that's nice if you're one of the big strong dogs, but if you're the smaller, weaker dog that gets run over every time, it's not that fun, you know? So if you build in small increments, no matter what kind of animal you have, I'm using the dog as an example, but this is true of all animals. They get confident, and then you get confident. You know, they did indeed like it. If they don't start to respond after a couple times, it's just not their thing. It might be yours, right? You might have to find a different activity. Maybe walking by yourselves on a leash is more fun than being run over by a pack of dogs at the dog park. If your dog is big and loves to play, or even a lot of the small ones, then make sure he's in there with a group of dogs that are kind of the same size. That sort of thing. There's a lot you can do. In other words, you don't want to be controlling, but after you have done a few increments with them, if it's not their thing, you probably are being controlling by making them go play, go have fun with these dogs. When he's thinking, I'd rather just sit next to you because it's scary. Well, in which case, then just take them to a park. So let us, in other words, the calls that I get are from people putting a lot of effort into doing something that maybe is pretty obvious the animal just doesn't enjoy it. They all have personalities. Listen to what, you know, hear the feedback. Listen to what they say and what they show you, and then, you know, go, if they're having a blast doing it, then you're right on. Then you go ahead and keep building it up and go ahead and go for it. So misplaced effort is one of the things that I sometimes see, which is always well-meaning, but doesn't mean it doesn't, you know, need a little bit of amending. The other thing I see lots of times too, when people ignore training their animals, they kind of they get themselves in a confused place. The animal often doesn't know what is expected of him. So training is such a big place to put effort that is so valuable. Almost. I bet you half of the animals I talk to every single day have a training question where they're not quite sure what's expected of them. Somehow somebody missed a step to explain something to them. Or maybe, I think this is more true, I know it was when I was younger, when I had dogs when I was younger, if you feel bad a little bit about training them, so you just don't. Oh, he doesn't really like to do that, so I don't make him do it. But a couple minutes of literally 2 seconds of sit, stay, a couple of things that give you a common language are so useful throughout the rest of your life. You know, very helpful. Good dog. That was it. Yay. You know, telling them that you appreciate what they just did for you because that was what you had in mind also strengthens the relationship, but it gets rid of confusion. So lots of times, your effort you put in should be eliminating confusion. That's the gold standard as far as I'm concerned, either your confusion or their confusion. If you see that you have more confusion going on than non-confusion, you've either missed a couple steps, they don't like it, or they don't get why you're doing it at all. I know someone that started to train her dog for agility. The dog just was afraid of the jumps. He was afraid of the tunnel. He didn't see why he wanted to run over this or jump over that. He just didn't see the point. So I went wrong because he was running back to the car every time she took him to this fabulous class that was expensive, and she was having fun meeting new people, and she was excited. And he was sort of being the dopey creature that just ran underneath the car and wouldn't even come out. So she was like, what am I doing wrong? Well, maybe he doesn't like it, just, you know, earlier what I said about. But training should always bring about questions that are answerable. So if you're throwing too much at them with the training too fast, they just shut down. I don't care what kind of animal it is, and people do the same thing. Go back, start over. Don't say, oh, he took 5 classes and he should be doing, you know, exercise 6 now. Say, ah, we must have missed something. Put your ego aside, go back to class 1, start over and see where you've missed something. Just like anybody, animals sometimes don't always remember what you taught them to do. Take a moment and get the training right. Spend a little time on it. 5 minutes a day can make a huge difference if you're training an animal. You don't have to drill on them. If they don't get it, keep working on that one part that they don't get so that, you know, it's in place and it's a tool for the two of you to communicate for the rest of their life. That's good effort. So the last area is really an interesting one too, because it has to do with, are you equipped to do this? So I'm going to talk about that right after this break. You're listening to Laura Rowley on Animal Connections with Laura Rowley.
Animal Connections with Laura Rowley is an intuitive show created for you to learn what it's like to talk to animals. Laura shares 20 years of experiences of being a pet psychic and healer every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, media partner for the Omega Institute. Our beloved animals share our lives and have amazing insights into our well-being, providing us with opportunities for personal growth once we truly begin to listen. It's fun to use animal wisdom to enhance our emotional and spiritual world. Who better than our furry friends to teach us the wisdom born of unconditional love? What if your dog, cat, or horse could help you with your love life? What would they suggest? It's fun to think about and a wonderful way to conduct yourself. After all, animals know well how to love and invite us to love them unconditionally. That's a pretty great way to live life. Animals always communicate with our highest good as their central focus, even when sometimes we feel stymied or frustrated with their behavior. Visit laurarowleyhealer.com to book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading. Laura's readings and workshops help you find the part of you that's able to tune in and connect to your amazing animals. Laura Rowley believes we can all understand by listening differently. Book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading now by going to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's LaurarowleyHealer.com.
Quantum Jumps presents a radical new paradigm that we exist in an interconnected holographic multiverse in which we literally jump from one parallel universe to another. In a moment, you can become smarter, more confident, happier, more outgoing, more effective, in better relationships, with more willpower. When you sense a new connection to another possible you, living the life you'd prefer, immerse yourself naturally into that new state of being. And voila, you've made a quantum jump. Supported by scientific research, Quantum Jumps is an inspirational book backed with practical tools to help you live a happier, more prosperous life. Learn more at quantumjumps.com.
Are you searching for a way to help create global change? Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's vision is to have an eclectic group of radio hosts dedicated to educating, enlightening, and helping humankind with positive messages and tools that enhance lives using different modalities and programs. If you would like to join our team and help illuminate the universe, call Deborah at 508-226-1723 or Deborah at dreamvision7radio.com.
Lucid dreaming allows us to access the power of our unconscious to heal our minds while we sleep. The shadow refers to all that we hide from others. Discover how to lucid dream and transform your shadow side with best-selling author Charlie Morley. Mention discount code DREAM for 20% off when you register for Lucid Dreaming Into the Shadow at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, October 28th to the 30th. Learn more at eomega.org.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back. This is Laura Rowley. You're listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. We're talking about, are you doing too much for your animal? So where do people do too much? Sometimes when they plug into an idea that isn't really the most successful plan, and the animal falls out and is trying to tell you, I fell out of your plan. So one place I notice sometimes is that we have this grand plan where we want to put some effort into something with our dog or horse or cow or donkey, whatever, and maybe we're really not equipped to execute the plan ourselves, and we hadn't really thought about that fully. So when you adopt an animal, for instance, lots of rescues have happened in the last 2-3 years because of COVID and a number of other things, which is a beautiful thing. All these animals got rescued, but lots of times we romanticize that we're rescuing them, but maybe we're really not equipped to be their best home. You know, if they are traumatized, and maybe they got tossed away because they had no training, so they were a pain in the neck to the last owner, and the last owner wasn't going to bother, which is sad, but a fact that happens very often. You don't want to be the next person that's not equipped to really handle maybe a traumatized, ill-trained animal that's got a ton of bad habits. Think about that. You know, are you wanting to take a class with that animal? Are you thinking, I don't really have time to do that. Maybe you've got the wrong job for that. Maybe you've got the wrong lifestyle for that. And I think this is the biggest thing I want to say about that. Make sure that you might be really excited to do this. Look, I brought home this dog, kids and husband, or, you know, we're all going to take care of this dog. Now I want you to walk him every morning, and you're going to start to feed him, and we're not going to be able to go on vacations for 3 months because I don't think it's safe to leave him alone yet. So all of a sudden, I have my family looped into, let's all take care of the dog. Now, in a wonderful life, we would all go, yay, let's all do this together, and it's a beautiful world. But in reality, everybody else in your family also has a life and might not be quite as committed as you are, and you end up stuck with it, or they end up resentful. Talked to a woman the other day. Her husband kind of came on in the middle of the call and almost interrupted the call because he was distraught. They adopted a really cool dog. He really loved the dog, but the dog had a lot of issues, and it wasn't an easy thing to fix. This particular dog's issues because they were badly embedded in him because he'd been traumatized from a really bad home before them. So he felt awful saying this, but he said, I just have to interrupt this phone call. He said, she won't go on vacation anymore with me now that we have a dog. And the woman, proudly, her name was Barb, said, well, I never leave my dogs alone until they're integrated into our home, and this one's having trouble integrating, and so I don't feel right about doing that. It's not appropriate. So she had a strong opinion. And he said, well, I love my animals too, and I love my life, and I love you, but can't we somehow like get a house sitter, or can't we find a compromise? Because to never go on a vacation is sort of putting effort into the dog, but not effort into your own life, effort into your own marriage. So she really wasn't equipped with the idea that she was going to do it perfectly, but he didn't really want to lose her as his companion, and he wanted her to get real and go on a trip with him. You know, so there had to have been a lot of different ways they could solve that, like get somebody in to stay with the dog for a couple days at a time until the dog got used to this. Again, training in small increments. Is what I suggested. And, you know, I think they worked it out. That was between the two of them. But in other words, if you're putting all this effort into an animal, but not into your own relationships, and your own family is kind of irritated with the whole thing, it's not really fair to anybody because, you know, first and foremost, you're defeating the purpose. Not only are you not prioritizing people well, but the animal generally knows that somehow there's strife and unhappiness based on the fact that they live in the house. Like, they feel it. I would say rarely do they not feel it. So now you've taken a rescue and you've made them more stressed and more traumatized because they know somebody's angry because they're here, you know, in your life. So it's good to know that you want to do this, but are you equipped to do it is a really good question when we're wondering about the whole idea of effort to have an animal and how much is too much. Okay. Too much at the risk of the rest of your family isn't good for anybody, is my big point there. So now I just want to move on to another part of this, which is kind of goes really into the whole idea of effort. But if we sort of segue it out into money, how much money is going to be enough to solve this problem? Spoke to a woman yesterday. She took a racehorse that was doing terribly at the racetrack. He wasn't winning anything, and he was kind of bad at being a racehorse, but he looked like he could be a good show horse. And she spent a lot of money training him to try to re-educate him, and it turns out he was sort of too sensitive and too high-strung for the job of being a family horse, so he wasn't working for her. Meanwhile, she had a lot of money invested in him. So now she doesn't know quite what to do because she can't even ride him. And, I had to tell her, like, you can't turn him into something other than what he is. He's a highly sensitive, super athlete, and you want him to be the kid's pony. Like, kids bang buckets around. They knock things around. They're usually not that coordinated when they get on and get off. You know, this horse has been professionally handled by people, and he's too high strung for kids. Could he be that one day? Yes, he could be. Is he that now? No, he's not. So she already knew that, I think, but she just wanted to, like, talk it over with the animal, and they talked a lot about the circumstances around that and what she could do to help him. In the meanwhile, she probably needed to rehome him. So he needed a lot of extra care. He needed a special diet. So I think the way to think about the whole money piece, you know, because money is really effort. When we put money in, we say, this is worth it to me. So it's another sort of branch of the effort of having an animal in your life. So it's not like anybody wants to be cheap about taking really good care, vet care, chiropractic, allergies, special diet, supplements, training. Nobody wants to be cheap or say, oh, that's not worth it to me. I don't like that dog, or I don't like that horse well enough to bother. But it's pretty realistic to say money is effort, and maybe it's not that it's a bother. Maybe you are not equipped to do it. You know, if you have limitations on your funds, I think you have to sort of take an idea and split it into, I'd enjoy helping this animal, and I can afford giving him everything I have, the effort of money, the effort of care, the effort of the inconvenience. Because sometimes, let's just say it, it's inconvenient. We wouldn't change it for the world, but it's inconvenient to solve their problems for them. So we could say, oh, it's a pleasure to do that. And if you really feel that, then it will be a pleasure. Versus another idea, and this is a little trap people fall into, they want to be good people. They want to rescue animals. So they start to feel, I have to take him to the vet. I have to get the special diet. I'm not choosing it, in other words. It's being forced upon me because of this terrible situation with this sad animal, and I've got to do everything I can to plow resources into him. So that's sort of the wrong preface. Whenever you say to yourself, I have to do X, I have to get this dog and help him, I have to take this horse and rehome him and teach him new things, versus, boy, would I love to do that. I'd enjoy helping this animal. You can kind of just do a reality check right there and proceed accordingly. Because if you're doing it out of a sense of obligation or guilt, which is, I have to do this, then you're doing yourself a disservice and you're doing them a disservice from day one. I should do this because I'm lucky I have a nice home and this poor dog doesn't have a home. You know, maybe you want to help pay for a rescue that rescues dogs. There's ways you can help that, but are you the best person for it is maybe the better question. So money has to do with how much resources we have available to fix a problem. And if you think it's too expensive, this is too expensive, if your inner self tells you that, it's okay. Let yourself off the hook. Do it another time when you're in a different position, when money isn't quite a strain on you. The idea, in other words, rescuers who sink their own ship by getting too many animals on the ark sink the ark. You want it to be a healthy thing that everybody enjoys it. Sure, you're going to have bumps in the road, even on the best day. But so what? Right? But if everything just feels like I'm doing this because I feel like I'll be guilty if I don't do it, that's sort of money ill spent. And people get themselves in that position a lot. A sense of, you know, kindness sometimes, for sure. But more likely you're doing it because you feel like if you don't do it, you'll be a bad person. And as much as we want to help the next person and the next animal in the world, we're better off doing that when we're capable financially. When we're not capable financially, we end up doing kind of a halfway job. And then we feel even worse. And maybe they don't actually get, you know, all the care that they need. So just being realistic about, you know, money is always effort. Do I want to use effort enjoying something, or is it because I have to? Big place. If you find you have to, put the brakes on the project and rethink it and reevaluate it. Perfectly acceptable to do that. Don't feel bad about it. I talked to somebody that got a dog that was super skinny from a pound. Dog was in deplorable condition. And just didn't feel they could leave that day without taking the dog home with them. And understandable. I would have felt the same way. I bet most of you would have felt the same way too. But then it turns out he had a pretty serious digestive disorder when she got a vet workup done. And, you know, he needed dog food that was like $50 a bag, you know, and he needed 3 or 4 bags a month, and he needed to go to the vet quite a bit and be on some supplements and some medicine for his digestive tract, and it turned out to be a really pretty expensive thing every month. And, you know, by the end, she was like, I want to know if he's ready to eat cheap dog food. That's what she asked me. And I said, well, what did the vet say? And she said, well, I you know, it doesn't seem to think so yet, but I just thought you could tell me, like, how comfortable he was. So, you know, I had to tell her that he was comfortable. He was doing very well, but that was because he was on the expensive dog food. You know, if you took him off of it, I didn't see the track running quite so clearly, and you'd be back into unhealthy. So, you know, she said, that isn't really what I wanted to hear. And I said, of course it isn't. But, you know, good, you got him this far. Good for you. And if this is not the dog for you, you can find someone else that would take him, knowing that they had the resources to buy all the expensive care he needed, because it might take a long time for him to get better. He was in really bad shape, and he was old when you found him. So, you know, it's not a young, vibrant dog that can just bounce back necessarily. She appreciated it. I think it helped her see that, you know, sometimes we're a bridge to the dog's health and happiness, but maybe we're not the destination to it. We're not the end home. And nothing wrong with saying, good, I did a good thing. I got him out of the pound. I helped them. I moved them forward in life. I helped myself. But this is a bigger nut than I can chew. So, you know, find someone that, you know, is fully aware, fully disclosed what's going on. And everybody wants to rescue an animal. Everybody wants to help. So there's lots of people out there that will do that with you and for you. And, you know, it'll be kind of a group effort. And, you know, that's perfectly great. So you're listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. And I am on every Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern and 9 p.m. Eastern. You can listen online or on your mobile devices. To learn more and for a full schedule, please go to dreamvision7radio.com.
What if your dog, cat, or horse could help you with your love life? What would they suggest? It's fun to think about and a wonderful way to conduct yourself. After all, animals know well how to love and invite us to love them unconditionally. That's a pretty great way to live life. Animals always communicate with our highest good as their central focus, even when sometimes we feel stymied or frustrated with their behavior. Visit laurarowleyhealer.com to book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading. Laura's readings and workshops help you find the part of you that's able to tune in and connect to your amazing animals. Laura Rowley believes we can all understand by listening differently. Book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading now by going to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's LAURARROWLEY healer.com. Animal Connections with Laura Rowley is an intuitive show created for you to learn what it's like to talk to animals. Laura shares 20 years of experiences of being a pet psychic and healer every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, media partner for the Omega Institute. Our beloved animals share our lives and have amazing insights into our well-being, providing us with opportunities for personal growth once we truly begin to listen. It's fun to use animal wisdom to enhance our emotional and spiritual world. Who better than our furry friends to teach us the wisdom born of unconditional love?
Are miracles real? Can you move from mayhem to miracles? 30 prominent authors say yes as they share their high fives and down lows of challenges, abuse, addiction, and love. Experience hope, the magic elixir of miracles, through the personal stories of New York Times bestselling authors James Redfield, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Sister Jenna, Reverend Temple Hayes, and many more. If you like bestsellers, Chaos to Clarity, and Crappy to Happy, you'll love Crying and Laughing Through Mayhem to Miracles. Sacred Stories of Transformational Hope, available now on Amazon and in bookstores worldwide.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back. I'm Laura Rowley, and you are listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're talking today, a topic near and dear to my practice and my daily work, which is, are you doing enough for your animal, or really, are you doing too much for your animal? So the idea is here, I'm trying to give you some checkpoints so that you don't get in too deep with the wrong animal or with a lifestyle that isn't going to work for everybody. We want everyone to be happy when they choose a pet, heal a pet, take care of a pet, train a pet, any of that stuff. So the third big category that I like to talk about is a place where you can kind of get maybe a little bit lost is how much care does that particular animal need? Sometimes you don't know that going in, right? So you can only like sometimes learn it like after everything has gone the wrong way and you have to fix some problems. So that's okay. Sometimes we can't know the answer to any of these in advance. The trick is to think about it maybe a little bit with a different twist. So as far as care is concerned, there's kind of an overreaching idea here that I like to bring up, and that is the kind of an overview that have you done enough can lead you to start to feel unpeaceful. And you never want that to be part of your care package. I mentioned the one woman wouldn't go on vacation because that wasn't enough for her dog, even though her husband wanted her to go on vacation. So sort of the same idea there of how much care can you give where you can say, all right, that's done. A lot of the things that we take care of during the day in our lives are task-oriented. So I check off the box. I completed these tasks. I got the kids ready. They went on the bus. They went to school. Done. Now it's the teacher's job for a few hours till they come home. Then I make dinner. Done. With animals, it can be kind of like never done because they're always there with you. They always need you. They can't let themselves in. They can't let themselves out, etc. The obvious things like food, water, and care only comes from you. So check off the boxes, making sure you're doing, you know, just the right basic stuff for sure. But then there's another thing that I'd like to sort of really emphasize here is I think a good place to spend money like training is in nutrition. Buy the best dog food you can afford. Make dog food if you can. That is money and effort well spent. Why? We are what we eat. So Hippocrates, who's considered the father of medicine, you know, we've all heard of the Hippocratic Oath, believed that food was medicine. In other words, whatever we had nutritionally either promoted our health or didn't promote our health. Fortunately, we have modern medicine now that fills in the gap when that doesn't all work out perfectly, right? But with animals, it often really helps greatly if you can feed the best food that you can possibly feed. Hippocrates said, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. So this concept is really the idea of prioritizing food in an individual health plan, like for your animal, with the goal of either preventing or reducing symptoms or even reversing a disease state. Food contains antioxidants, which protect the body's cells from free radicals, and that reduces inflammatory diseases. And before modern medicine, it was all we had, right? So I don't know, humans have walked the earth, I think, you know, for millions of years now, depending on your belief system, but certainly for tens of thousands of years. And animals have too. We've evolved for 65 million years into who we are now as modern creatures. So the plants that we ate to get there are what made us all survive and thrive. So sometimes I noticed I was with some people just like, oh, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, and they all said that they never feed their dogs human food. And it was a point of pride that they gave them kibble or, you know, dry dog food. I'm not saying that's bad to do, but make sure you're looking at your ingredients and buying the best one you can buy with as little preservatives that are in it. Ground up. If you look at the ingredients in food on the back of any pet food, it's basically the same stuff we eat, but ground up in a way so that it's convenient for us and preserved so that it doesn't go bad. How much it gets preserved, how much it gets ground up affects really how much the nutrients are left in it. So that's not a very radical theory. Keeping it simple, keeping it basic. When we're young, we can eat fast food and junk and we're okay. Think about what you ate when you were a kid. As you get older, if you ate the same way you ate when you were a kid, you know, sugar pops and Pop-Tarts and that kind of stuff, candy. You know, when you get older, if you do that, you'll weigh 1,000,000 pounds or you'll have a lot of diseases going on because you're causing inflammation because it doesn't have good nutrients in it. As we age, we need better nutrients to stay well and to keep free radicals at check. Free radicals are what cause damage to our bodies, and ultimately diseases can prosper whenever that starts to happen. So that sounds sort of self-evident, but I noticed that a lot of people that I talk to are either very aware of this and have done their homework and read the back of their pet food, or they haven't. So if you haven't yet done that, go ahead, flip the bag over and read what's in that. And maybe even Google a couple of the ingredients and make sure that you're doing the best you can do for whatever species you have. If it's too processed or really not all that identifiable or has a lot of chemicals in it, that's what it is. You know, it's processed with chemicals in it, right? So that isn't really the idea of food being medicine. That's the idea of food being preserved so it's convenient for us to feed it, which doesn't necessarily make it healthy. Okay, a bag of cookies, you know, when you're a kid, doesn't have that much nutrition in it. Maybe it's got some nice sugar, and we like that, but you certainly can't do that when you're in your 50s. Decide, I'm just going to live on cookies. It won't work. You'll start to get sick. So as an overview, I think it's important to really take a moment and just flip over the bag and see what's in that, or flip over the can and go, huh, what is that? What does it mean when they say this is in there? You know, we have Google now. It's not brain surgery. You can Google it, look, and go, well, what is that item that I don't recognize on the back of the dog food? If it's one of the first few ingredients, then it's trouble. If it's later on in the list, it's less trouble. Dog food companies are not inherently evil, but there's price points, and lots of times those price points are based on the quality of the ingredients and how they're manufactured. And when you start to read it, you can start to understand that. I'm gonna have a guest on that's going to help us understand that even more in the next couple shows. So stay tuned for that one because that'll be a good one. But I want you to kind of get that idea that your third category of taking care of how much is too much for an animal, if you overdo on the nutrition part, I see time and time again that that's never a bad idea. Underdoing there, but buying less than quality stuff because you just think, that's good enough. That's how I used to, you know, when I was a kid, my parents used to send me down the grocery store aisle and you flipped a bag of dog food into the thing and nobody really knew what it was. I used to pick it probably as a kid based on, like, I liked the dog on the cover, right? That's how we fed our dogs. This was back in the 60s and 70s. You know, now I think with horror, I used to do that. Well, of course, I didn't know any better, neither did my parents, but I do now. So that is not a place where I think you're being, you know, crazy if you overdo. It's a good place to overdo. Exercise is another place. They like it. Dogs, animals, horses, cats, they like to be in the rhythm of your life. So if you exercise every day or you play with your cat a little bit every day by letting him, you know, chase a little feathery ball around, and that's his exercise, they love it when we do things in a timely manner sort of at the same time every day. You know, I get up and I have coffee, I get out the toy, and I play with my animal. That is, you don't have to do a lot, but if you just did it for 2 minutes, a couple play moments versus, you know, an hour or two, it doesn't have to bury you, in other words, as an obligation. But if you just check in with them and go in the morning, we always do this fun thing together. You know, for instance, I have this kind of crazy little labradoodle, and she insists on playing retriever games. She's always dragging something, you know, out of the laundry room that's your sock or a toy or a ball, and she'd play for an hour and a half, which would probably hurt her if she overdid, right? So I always make sure I toss it to her for a couple minutes every morning before I go to work, that kind of stuff. So a little checking in with exercise also helps you sort of check in with exercise. It can also help you go out for a walk every morning if it is a dog, for instance, or even a cat. I know people that walk their cats. A horse, certainly. They need the exercise, but horse people generally know that. So those two things, exercise and nutrition in your care package, are huge. And then, of course, you rely on your veterinarian for the, you know, for the medical stuff. And they help you with that piece of it based on where you live and, you know, what sort of environment you're in. I do think it's important to sometimes not to get too carried away with worrying that you're doing enough medical stuff for your animal. Obviously, listen to your vet first. I'm not a veterinarian. I'm not a doctor at all. But, you know, just use some good sense. Like, you know, if your dog lives in an area where he's exposed to certain things, like Lyme's disease or ticks, fleas, then certainly you should participate in, you know, preventative measures for that. But if it's an inside animal that you never take them out and then they walk on a sidewalk, maybe they don't need to have all those chemicals put in their body, or you don't have to give it to them quite as often. And you can say to your vet, well, since he never really leaves my side and he walks on a leash, you know, do I have to give him the heart guard every month, or can I skip some, or what do you think about that? And have your vet sort of help you modulate based on lifestyle. Some of the parameters for some of those things sort of assume that a dog or a cat is going to always be exposed to these bad things. And so people sometimes get carried away preventing trouble. So is trouble imminent with their lifestyle? Maybe not. Maybe it's a cat that never leaves the house. You know, then does he need to be on flea medicine? Sometimes I find people are confused about that. So ask your vet. Don't be afraid to say, am I being reasonable or unreasonable here? Help me think it out. And so I think one of the big pieces or the big takeaway I hope that you gathered from today's show about are we doing enough, you know, it's kind of commonsensical, and but it never feels like common sense when it's your stuff. It always feels a little confusing, so cut yourself some slack. That's okay. You know, I think you want to kind of really, I always talk about fears, you know, in my show and how they are, they always have a place in our lives, and they can really yank us one way or yank us another way. So our fears, when I ask myself, have I done enough? When you start to do that, just relax, you know, stop, regroup, look for peace. Trust that you probably have done enough for the most part. Think about where you have a gap in your issue, if it's communication versus care, then just go back and try to fill that gap again. Lots of times the fear of the future can really get us worried, like, what if I haven't done everything I can? Everything's going to fall apart. But sometimes that's just us worrying. So then we kind of corrupt the peacefulness of our present time by worrying about what we should have done in the past or we haven't yet taken care of in the future. Be where you are now. Do you have a problem or don't you? And calm yourself down and notice that lots of times when we get calm and we get centered, then we're really in the moment. We're in the now. We're present, they call that, right? So then your calmness and your strength transfers to the animal, and a lot of problems that are behavioral kind of go away when we're in that place. So that's the big picture, is don't panic. It's good. You're trying. Cut yourself some slack. Try to get peaceful. That'll definitely help them be peaceful, and all of us function better when we are present and we're peaceful. So thank you so much for listening. This has been Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on Dream Vision 7 Radio. Thank you.
Thank you for joining Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. Heard every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Join Laura next time to discover how you can embrace the wisdom flowing from your loved animals. Communication starts with an intention to understand. Each week, Laura helps you find your own unique ability to create a better understanding of yourself as taught through the loving eyes of your animals. To connect with Laura Rowley, go to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's LaurarowleyHealer.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.